It's the Ray Appleton Podcast from KMJ and KMJNow.com.
So, we are talking kind of some heavy stuff here, which is, you know, not really good on a Friday, but it's not political. You know, it's scientific. It's a rival, as I see it in my words, to Elon Musk's Neuralink. You know, and this is by a company called Paradromics. So what is this little thing transplanted in the brain supposed to do once it gets transplanted in there? It seeks to address motor and sensory deficits, chronic pain, what would I like that, mood disorders, as well as the treatment of, treatment-resistant illnesses, if I can call them that, mental conditions that don't have a link to any success with a pill or whatever. And the company says this is going to represent a $250 billion market in the USA. Now, other ventures have noted that the various potential applications for brain implants, like Neuralink, which is a brain-computer interface firm started by Elon Musk, also have received FDA breakthrough designation for its technology. This was 3 years ago for Elon. And the company has repeatedly claimed that the human trials would imminently start, although Neuralink has not yet received the FDA authorization for that move, to start putting little chips in your head. And this is according to an investigative report by the media. But Neuralink posted a job last year for individuals who would like to work closely with some of the, quote, most innovative doctors on the company's first clinical trials, as well as to help build up a team responsible to enable Neuralink's clinical research activities to go on, and developing the regulatory interactions that come out of a fast-paced, ever-evolving environment, to use their words. But the worldwide market specific to brain implants, not very big, you know. It's expected to compound a national annual growth of about 9% over the next 5 years. And that's according to analysis from a company called Grandview Research. And the growing population of senior citizens who are more likely to suffer from diseases such as Parkinson's and Alzheimer's is expected to serve as a very obvious key market for this technology. The baby boomers, us, we getting old, and we're going to need a little help. You know, like I learned the other day that I virtually have no hearing. I still can communicate, but after 53 years under headphones and subjecting myself to, you know, decades off and on of loud rock and roll music, being a musician, and age, it goes away. I went and had to, you know, my ear checked out, my right ear, because I kind of lost all the hearing when I got COVID, and they sort of fixed that. But the doctor says, dude, you know, I mean, you maybe think you're doing fine, but you got mostly nothing going on here. Interesting. But, you know, deep brain stimulators, which add electronic impulses through electrodes implanted in the brain, currently occupy the largest market share in the broader brain implant space. Yes, we actually have one of those, a space. It's increased awareness of treatment options for neurological movement disorders is expected to accelerate a lot of growth in the industry. That would make sense if somebody's paralyzed and all of a sudden you can stimulate the spinal cord, the spine, to react in a positive way and get somebody up on their feet. Yeah, you know. There's a company called Vagus Nerve Simulators, which sends impulses to the brains through the vagus nerve, which are expected to grow at the fastest annualized rate. It's a rather simplistic technology, maybe not as big as this one company, or Neuralink for that matter. But news of these advancements in, this is so far ahead for me, brain-computer interface technology, comes as firms are rushing to develop artificial intelligence solutions. Researchers at the University of Texas in Austin unveiled a system earlier this month which uses, here's the term, AI, to transform a person's brain activity into words, and we talked about this. It seems to be taken off. It's called the semantic decoder, and it learns how to translate thoughts as the person listens to podcasts. And the system concurrently measures brain activity and produces a text that mirrors somewhat the meaning of the individual's thoughts. It doesn't do it verbatim, but it does to a point where it gets the thoughts correct. And the system does not require implants, but it's, you know, impractical for use outside of a laboratory. You got to be hooked up to all kinds of gear in the laboratory for it to work. So that, again, is not all that practical. I think it would take a brave person and a desperate person to seek, you know, a brain implant to help them with speech, to help them with the motory senses, to help them with, you know, chronic pain and all that. But the day is apparently coming where this is going to be fairly common. And if you can come up with a chip, an implant, or whatever that does all of this, more power to you. You just wonder about what any after effects might be. Or if there is AI involved, as in that one I just told you about, you know, is that going to be problematic if it backfires, turning the individual into some sort of human-killing robot on behalf of the AI that's in the intelligent person's brain? I don't know, I'm making that up as I go along, but that would be a little scary, you know? So there, I mean, it's all for the, you know, positive reasons of making people whole again, which I kind of have to go along with that. I mean, it's time that we get to these things that can help somebody walk, help somebody think, help retard Alzheimer's. God, that would be great. Seems like Alzheimer's is really advancing in this country. I don't know if that's true or not, but dementia, those situations, man, it's sad. Sad. Speaking of brains, Dianne Feinstein. She still has them, but have they been compromised after her, you know, stretch away from the office, so to speak? She's facing a lot of further calls to resign after it was revealed that she suffered additional health complications stemming from her shingles, and this was in the area of the brain. She was absent, she's 89, from D.C. for a couple of months while she recovered from shingles, but she also suffered from encephalitis, an inflammation of the brain, and that happened because of the virus, and a facial paralysis known as Ramsey-Hunt syndrome. Lucky me, I encountered encephalitis, which they thought was perhaps from a mosquito, West Nile virus. They weren't sure. And it happened out, it started manifesting itself when I was out of the Civil War reenactment. And it got so bad in one day, I had to be hauled off to a hospital. And I was in a coma for like 3 weeks. I don't know if anybody remembers that. Another one of the great stories of Ray Appleton. And they called in the Russian doctors from Davis and all that. And encephalitis is not fun because I remember hallucinating terribly after I made it home from the Civil War reenactment. And my wife at the time said, "You're not staying here. You got to go get some help." And she called in the troops and they hauled me away. And as soon as I got to the intensive care unit at Community Hospital, I just zipped out for a few weeks and went to sleep until this cleared up in my head. So encephalitis is not fun. Adam Russell, who's a spokesperson for Feinstein, said in a statement to the press that encephalitis had resolved itself shortly after she was released from the hospital in March. However, the senator was still experiencing complications from the Ramsey-Hunt syndrome. It's facial paralysis. So the previously undiagnosed medical conditions regarding Feinstein came after she'd already faced, you know, many calls to leave office and get out amid concerns about her mental and physical well-being. And these are questions, you know, over and over again, all ringing to the same tune. Will she be able to perform her duties? During the absence from D.C., she missed dozens of Senate votes. The Senate Judiciary Committee, of which Feinstein is a member, was also unable to confirm some of Joe Biden's judicial nominees because she wasn't there to vote. Congressman Ro Khanna from California has been really leading the pack for her to get out. He was amongst the first to call on Feinstein to resign, and he said in April that it's very obvious that she can no longer fulfill her duties. Khanna has now again stated that Feinstein should step down in the wake of the encephalitis and Ramsey-Hunt diagnosis. Susie Tompkins Buell, a major Democratic donor, longtime Feinstein supporter, also said, "Now is the time for her friend to resign." So Feinstein is getting this from inside of the Senate and outside of the Senate, pushing her out, wanting her to go. And if that happens, that means the governor can appoint whoever he wants. But he's made the promise if he does appoint, it will be a black woman. And that would virtually wipe out the chances of Adam Schiff winning that job in an election. But if what we heard from yesterday at Congresswoman Luna, if she gets her way, he's going to be bounced from the Congress anyway. She put that petition together, that movement together, via, you know, potential legislation for him to step down from Congress forever and forevermore. Not step down, he's going to get fired for all of his lying during the Russiagate situation. And I couldn't agree more. Break time at News Talk 580, 105.9 KMJ. It's Ray Appleton, that's me. Philip Teresi, E. Curtis Johnson, all going to come and haunt you this afternoon, just after 2, right here.
The countdown is on for the 2024 NFL Draft, presented by Bud Light, live from Detroit, and you can attend in person for free.
Welcome to the NFL Draft.
See the next NFL stars and experience the ultimate NFL fan festival, featuring live concerts, interactive games, player autographs, and more. The NFL Draft, presented by Bud Light, April 25th through 27th. Visit NFL.com/draft access to register for free entry today.
Former Navy SEAL Sean Ryan shares real stories from real people from all walks of life on The Sean Ryan Show. Comedian John Crist.
How long have you been in Nashville? Let's see, 2018 is when I moved here. I lived in an apartment. I didn't know anything about it. I lived in L.A.
You were living in L.A.? How was that?
Yeah. Well, let's see. Good for my career. Send me to rehab, though. So that's pretty much the sum of it.
The Sean Ryan Show on YouTube or wherever you listen.
The Ray Appleton Podcast.
It's free.
KMJNow.com.
By the way, if that term, Ramsey Hunt syndrome, sounds familiar, that's the same thing that Justin Bieber had that made news all that not long ago, you know? Same thing that attacked Senator Feinstein. So whether you're 89 or 39, you can get that stuff for facial paralysis, and I would imagine that ain't fun. I just mentioned Ro Khanna and his role in trying to push Dianne Feinstein out of the Senate. He's also the big drumbeater going after the use of the 14th Amendment to address the debt ceiling. The week before last, we talked about the 14th Amendment and its use, which would allow the president to bypass Congress, make up the rules as he goes along on the debt ceiling. And Ro Khanna has said that the president absolutely must use the 14th Amendment. The host of this program on MSNBC asked, I do have to ask, looking at the bonkers nature of the Republican conference, how you're looking, thank you, you're looking at this debt ceiling negotiation. A lot of people are saying this conference is so wacko, so uninterested in actual governance. That's your words, sir. Why should the president of the United States be bargaining with their representative, Kevin McCarthy, directly? Why should he make any concessions to people who do not have an interest in the American voters at heart? Think this guy's a little biased? Why not use the 14th Amendment? Why doesn't he use anything, something? But don't negotiate with terrorists. So that's what the Republican conference is, according to this guy on MSNBC. We're terrorists, huh? All right. And, you know, Ro Khanna said he should. He should use it. And this individual said he should use what? Repeat it again. He should use the 14th Amendment. Alex Wagner was the host, by the way. This guy Wagner, I don't have a lot of respect for. He continued, we should not be negotiating in this country about whether we pay our debts. America should pay its debts. This is not a Congress against the president. This is a Congress trying to overrule what past Congresses have already told the president to spend. So he has every authority to say, Congress, you told me to spend this money, and I'm not going to default America's debts. We're a patriotic nation. It's a patriotic duty to pay our bills, and I'm going to pay our bills. So let them sue. Let them sue, and let them take me to court. And Ro Khanna said, I think President Biden says I'm going to do my patriotic duty. In America, we pay our debts, and I'm going to pay them. Challenge me in the courts. I don't think that's they're going to win on that argument. But using the there are so many constitutional sticking points and questions to using the 14th to pay the debts. You know, what that does, it gives Biden an out. He can absolutely bypass Congress, and he can set the debt ceiling, I guess, wherever he wants within limits, and that would totally end the Republicans' quest for spending cuts, which we have to have. You know, and again, the president's reassuring the country, and I believe him. I don't think this is going to happen. There's not going to be any default. You know, House Republicans are proposing new work requirements for social benefit programs. You know this. They're nixing the president's massive student debt transfer and eliminating green energy-related tax credits in order to raise the debt ceiling, which, you know, all of that will cut sharply against Democratic priorities. So that's nothing new. To be clear, this negotiation is about the outlines of what the budget should look like, not whether or not we're going to go in fact, and pay our debts. Biden said this on Wednesday after meeting with Kevin and everybody else. The leaders have all agreed we will not default. Every leader has said that. And I think that's true. You know, this doesn't mean that things going forward are going to be easy. The only debt ceiling legislation to pass the chamber of the Congress is the Limit Save Grow Act, which it's not doing, which will reduce spending by $4.8 trillion while increasing the debt by $1.5 trillion. Now, I'm saying it hasn't done that yet because it hasn't been passed. You know, the White House has gone all out in opposing this bill, which they've dubbed the Default on America Act, yet some of the biggest proposals still remain in discussion. And according to the Nonpartisan Committee for a Responsible Federal Budget, strengthening work requirements for federal assistance programs would save $120 billion. Scrapping the student loan forgiveness and income-driven repayment overhauls would save $460 billion. Eliminating the green energy tax credits from the Inflation Reduction Act would save $570 billion. That's a lot of savings. It's not a revenue problem. It's a spending problem. So says Kevin McCarthy. It's not a water problem. It's a storage problem. So says Ray Appleton, Kevin McCarthy, Devin Nunes, and many others. On the work requirement idea, McCarthy added, why wouldn't Biden want to help people get out of poverty? I would say the same thing. Providing, you know, that they have to work to get their stipend actually helps them get out of poverty. The president had different ideas, saying that he wouldn't accept any new work requirements beyond those already in place, and that for Medicaid, it's a very different story. The Republican National Committee pushing this issue very hard, highlighting the Axios poll, which found that 63% of the respondents support work requirements, along with the previous Biden comments supporting the idea. But then he's kind of backed away from it a little bit. So Americans say that that's common sense. Biden used to agree. Doesn't agree much anymore. Student loan forgiveness is a bigger budget bugaboo and one that conservatives have targeted from the day the forgiveness plan was announced last August. The Supreme Court is going to rule on that plan next month, and they could strike it down. But canceling student loan debt was a Biden campaign promise, and one the Democrats used to, you know, outperform expectations in the midterms, meaning that reversing course could be tremendously damaging if the White House is seen to be doing this voluntarily, you know, taking back this whole school loan thing. The Vice President, Kamala Harris, acting as a stand-in for Biden during his trip to Japan, largely didn't address any of the specifics during the Thursday Zoom briefing. Instead, she just focused on the administration's longstanding messages about avoiding default. Thank God, I don't want her to do any more. I don't want her to put her hands on anything, you know? So where this is going to go, you know, if this is true, we stand at a default on June the 1st. That's literally around the corner. But I just cannot see this thing getting through without some sort of spending cut compromise. Otherwise, Biden could use the 14th, and that is even going to present more problem than it's worth, because that'll immediately go to the Supreme Court and could be shot down. And upon shooting that down, then we genuinely default. So that would be a big chance he is taking by using the 14th Amendment to circumvent Congress, to go around their back. And I hope and pray he doesn't do it. Just, you know, compromise on these other issues that involve spending cuts.
The Ray Appleton Podcast, right now. KMJNow.com.
This is really becoming interesting, also in New York. We've been doing a lot of talk about New York today. The eyewitnesses of the restraining of a homeless man by a Marine Corps veteran in New York say that they're thankful that the vet intervened. We're getting more and more of this. It was on May the 1st. Jordan Neely, who's got a long, long criminal record, a lot of mental problems, boarded the northbound F train, started screaming, throwing his jacket on the ground, getting within 2 inches of everybody's face, screaming about food and making weird statements. I'm sitting on a train reading my book. All of a sudden, I hear somebody spewing a lot of rhetoric. 60-year-old eyewitness. He said, I don't care if I have to kill and a couple of people. I'm going to go to jail. I'll take a bullet. That's a little scary. I don't care if I have to kill and F up a couple of people. Now, this retiree said the passengers were, you know, crowding around the exit signs, and they were all scared for their lives. Now, this guy Neely, he's 42 years old, had prior arrests. He had an active warrant waiting for him. He was the same guy that attacked a 67-year-old woman back in 2021. Do you remember this? He's giving her a broken eye socket, a black eye, broken nose. Just hit her. Walking down the street, just blasted her right in the face. So the Marine veteran, upon it's believed that he also heard the same thing. I don't care, you know, if I have to kill or F somebody up. He brought Neely to the ground and restrained him. Two other passengers helped hold Neely's limbs down. People were applauding. They don't normally do that when somebody's intentionally trying to kill somebody, you know? So when the police arrived on the scene, Penny remained. And he voluntarily went to the station to give police, you know, answers to their further questioning. And nobody wants to kill anybody. Mr. Penny didn't want to kill that man, the witness was telling Fox News. You should have seen the way Mr. Penny looked. He was distraught. He was very, very, very distressed. And who knows what he was going to be able to do. And he didn't go. He should have left. He didn't run. He stayed. And that's why he got in trouble. Now, the Manhattan District Attorney, our old buddy Alvin Bragg, charged the 25-year-old with second-degree manslaughter after the police had let him go and said, no charges, goodbye, see ya. He turned himself in. Penny's legal defense fund is now almost $3 million. Yeah. The Republican presidential candidate, Nikki Haley, called upon the New York governor to pardon him. Haley said he saw danger. He was trying to protect himself and other people on the subway. And the idea that Bragg would go and indict him this way without an investigation, without any sort of a grand jury, really? What I think needs to happen is the governor needs to pardon Penny. On the other hand, here comes Representative Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, criticizing the New York Mayor Eric Adams for not quickly condemning Penny, since the victim was of social status some would deem too low to care about. Her words, certainly not mine. That's, you know, what would you do if you had somebody, you know, 2 inches from your face ranting and raving and saying, you know, I don't care if I have to kill, I don't care if I have to F up a couple of people. You know, I mean, yeah, you'd be looking for the biggest, strongest guy on the block yourself. And that fell to the responsibility of this young former Marine, who by all intents and purposes, it was an accident. Nobody wanted anybody to die, but he did the right. He was protecting people and protecting himself. And this is one of those things that I'm probably going to carry on for months and months and wind up in some sort of a guilty verdict just because Alvin Bragg is that kind of a guy. You know, he's not going to let anything go by that he gets criticized for. I mean, he was fine when the police let him go, but let Penny go. But when people started complaining to Bragg, that's when he acted. Otherwise, in my opinion, he wouldn't have done a damn thing. But if people, you know, raised an eyebrow with him in an elected position, of course. Here's the big one. AM radios and cars. Lawmakers on Capitol Hill are pushing to keep AM radios in the nation's cars. Yes. It's a big bipartisan group, Democrats and Republicans, and they've introduced the AM for Every Vehicle Act. The bill calls upon the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration to require automakers to keep AM radio in all new cars at no additional cost. The legislation would also require automobiles makers, selling cars manufactured before the proposed regulation takes effect to let buyers know if the car does or does not come with an AM radio. So what's the deal? I mean, many of you can figure it out because you're AM radio users yourself of this station, AM and FM. Supporters of the preserving AM in cars cite public safety concerns. The sponsors of the bill put forth on Wednesday a large note about AM radio's historic role in transmitting vital information during emergencies, such as communication of natural disasters, especially to people in rural areas. Car makers shouldn't tune out AM radio in new vehicles or put it behind a costly digital paywall, according to Ed Markey. He's a Democrat from Massachusetts. He's one of the sponsors. He added that the bill aims to ensure that the resilient and popular communication tool does not become a relic of the past. And aside from my own biases, I get it. Safety is a great reason to maintain AM radios. The proposed legislation comes as more automakers are dropping broadcast AM radio from their newer models. And according to Markey's office, 8 out of 10 of the major car companies, including Tesla, BMW, and Ford, have removed it from their electric vehicles. And car makers, I mean, the car makers cite interference from electric motors that can cause static and noise on the AM transmissions. Some have suggested that internet radio or other, you know, communication tools could replace AM radio, but Markey and others have pushed back, pointing to situations where drivers may not have internet access. And that's true. So the Alliance for Automotive Innovation, a U.S. group that represents the major automakers, criticized the proposal, saying that, you know, an AM radio mandate isn't necessary. A trade group pointed out to the Federal Emergency Management Agency's Integrated Public Alerts and Warning System, which can distribute safety warnings of any kind across AM and FM and internet-based satellite radios, as well as over cellular networks. This is simply a bill to prop up and give preference to a particular technology that's now competing with other communication options and adapting to change the listenership, according to the Alliance. Not sure what they mean by that comment, but, you know, they were addressing the adding that lawmakers are and automakers are committed to ensuring drivers have access to public alerts, safety warnings, and it can be done in a number of different ways other than, you know, an AM radio. But the proposed legislation would also direct the Government Accountability Office to study whether an alternative communication could replicate and have the same impact that AM radio does for transmitting emergency information. So this is going to be a good one. The FCC, the Federal Communications Commission, and the National Association of Broadcasters, they've praised the legislation, which is also backed by Ted Cruz, Representative Josh Gottheimer, a Democrat from New Jersey, Ted Keene, a Republican from New Jersey, Marie Glauskamp Perez, a Democrat from Washington. Having AM radio available in our cars means we will always have access to emergency alerts and key warnings while we're out on the road. That's from the FCC chairwoman in a statement. Updating transportation should not mean sacrificing access to what can be life-saving information. How do you feel about that? Drivers, right now, listening to me on whatever it is, AM and FM, do you think we should be keeping AM radio? Huh? Nielsen data says more than 80 million people live in the USA still listen to AM radio every day. 80 million people. 80 million people can't be wrong. So, yeah, we may have a call for a time or two, a minute or two for a call. Jeez, Ray, before Philip gets here, can you tell it's the end of the week? But, you know, I should have got into this earlier. AM radio, keep it or dump it. 490-5858, 800-776-5858. Just for kicks, let's see if this gets you to the phones. We'll be right back.
Former Navy SEAL Sean Ryan shares real stories from real people from all walks of life on The Sean Ryan Show. Comedian John Crist.
How long have you been in Nashville? Let's see, 2018 is when I moved here. I lived in an apartment. I didn't know anything about it. I lived in L.A.
You were living in L.A.? How was that?
Yeah. Well, let's see, good for my career. Sent me to rehab, though, so. That's pretty much the sum of it.
The Sean Ryan Show on YouTube or wherever you listen.
Right now,
the Valley's legendary Ray Appleton.
The Ray Appleton Podcast, KMJNow.com.
Before we hit up Philip, and no, I'm not going to stand up and really hit him, I want to take one call at least on this AM radio thing going on with the government for cars. Michael, go ahead.
Hey, thank you, Ray. Appreciate it. You know, when I was a kid in the 70s, my brother and I went to Radio Shack, and we bought a crystal diode radio kit. We put it together. The first station we picked up was KMJ. And then we listened to KYNO 13 Kino because we wanted some rock.
Sure.
Hey, Al. Look, I'm a district manager for a company in town, and I drive from San Miguel to Madera. Oftentimes, when I get in the hills, the signal for FM dies, and I flip to AM, and I got you guys loud and clear.
Sure.
Several times during the winter, your transformer went down, but I got you on AM. So AM is needed. The people in the government are a bunch of idiots.
Well, it's not the government that wants to get rid of it. It's the government's trying to save it. It's the automakers that are trying to get rid of it. So this is a nice bipartisan group of Republicans and Democrats that want AM radios and cars. Let's get that straight. It's not the government saying, pull AM radios out. No, it's all the big automakers are saying, we don't want to put it in there anymore. It's old. It's antiquated. But for, you know, ideas of safety, hey, I mean, safety, what a concept. Got to have it, right? Philip Tressi is here.
Yes, sir.
Took a few days off this week to go honor flighting again, but what's going on today?
We had a whole lot. We are going to talk a little bit more about the AM radio thing.
Yeah, I just touched upon it. I think that's a good one.
It's. I know that it sounds like self-service if you're sitting there looking at 580 on your radio dial and listening to us talk about how important it is. And look, there's a reason that we've got the FM KMJ. There's a reason that we're on the apps. There's a reason that we stream on the website. We want to be where you are. But in the event of a real catastrophe, AM radio is going to be the thing that reaches the most people, period. And not having that in your car, you are not going to have the ability to get that information. The FCC and this bipartisan bill are right on the money. And that's not self-service. We'll be there one way or another. But not having AM radio is a disservice to you guys. And it is important.
Totally agree. I think about every disaster I've sat through at this radio station, the earthquake, 9/11, blah, 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 getting calls from my FM, you know, signal died, but I found you on AM. What's going on?
Yeah.
I mean, if I had a dollar for every time I heard that in the 36 years I've been here, I'd probably have $40. But still, I mean, people, you know, sort that out on their own, and they go looking on AM when there's trouble.
Exactly right. And I mean, I just think about the consequences for the Central Coast if something went sideways.
Oh, yeah.
580 AM, you'll get over there loud and clear, just like you're sitting in the middle of town here.
Bingo.
FM's a great signal, but you are not going to hear us in Grover Beach. So we'll talk a little bit more about that. We're going to talk about Mayor Dyer's budget and the nattering nabobs of negativism coming out. How many of the headlines today started with, oh my God, there's going to be a hike in our trash bills of like $4? It amazes me, the reaction to this. More cops, more firefighters, better service, better roads, but we're complaining about spending another $4 or $5, maybe $12 if we go whole hog, making sure that we've got working dump trucks so we don't look like New York during a union strike. We've also got this restaurant here in Fresno. A concerned citizen saw a dog being mistreated.
Oh, yeah.
And somehow this translated from neighbors who don't have the dog anymore and have no connection to the restaurant into a bunch of people Yelp bombing this Tasty Thai restaurant out on First and Belmont, claiming that they were cooking dogs. And it's not true.
That place has only been open like 6 months or something like that.
The family's
welcome to America. Jeez.
Yeah, the family's horrified at the idea, but the son who's helping his parents run it shut the business down because he's afraid that his septuagenarian parents are going to get assaulted by somebody who read an uninformed doofus freaking out on Yelp. So we'll talk about that a little bit more at length. Nasty social media posts circulating amongst Edison students. So once again, social media makes things worse for high school kids. We'll talk about what's circulating and how to talk to your kids about it. And a little bit more on Honor Flight, too.
Okay, good.
Yeah.
That's always a tasty subject.
There's so many good stories from this trip. It was such a good time. And finally, we will eventually get to the Star Wars Hotel at Disney World that is now being closed. Disney is possibly, maybe, altering their future business plans as a reaction to the tiff with Governor DeSantis. So we'll kind of break that down and see if this is a problem with the hotel or a problem with the business climate in Florida for Disney.
Probably a little bit of both.
Maybe.
Philip and E. Curtis Johnson coming up at 2:05. Next week is going to be a big week for presidential candidates on the Republican side, if you believe everything that we've been hearing. Chris Christie will announce, the former governor of New Jersey, next week, that he's going to be going after the presidency in 2024. DeSantis, near the end of next week, sources are saying he will announce. And Tim Scott, another one that has taken the papers out saying he's doing it, will also say he's doing it next week. So I think they better get together and chat about who, you know, so they can spread it out and they don't butt into each other on the same day. You know, pick a Monday, Wednesday, Friday, and just assign one to the other. You know, Tim, you're on Friday and you got it. But that's that could be very interesting. And all of a sudden there are, so that would be, let's see, there's Vivek Ramaswamy, Nikki Haley, Asa Hutchinson, Donald Trump, 1, 2, 3, 4, up to close to 10 people officially running for the Republican nomination. And that makes it a real game, you know. Donald Trump, though, I mean, still seems to be the spoiler with the big, big numbers. And that will change with other people making a formal announcement. What I've been saying about DeSantis for months is true. Whether it's going to happen or not, don't hold me to it. But typically, when you have a candidate that's deemed to be popular before they, you know, announce, once they finally announce, the numbers explode. Will that happen with DeSantis, or has too much time gone by and Donald Trump gathered up too much strength? In DeSantis's case, I think that the latter could be true, that he wasted too much time before he got into it officially and let Donald Trump get too far out there. The others, I'm not worried about because they don't have a chance. I don't think they have a chance at all, but that's just my lowly opinion. And when it comes to political prognostication, you've known for 3 decades I'm not the best. I don't do it all that well. Anyway, it's been a great week. Thanks to all the guests this week, Cash Patel, Steve Hilton. He'll join us again next Tuesday, and we will move on from there. And you have a brilliant weekend. Philip and E. Curtis Johnson on the way at News Talk 580, 105.9 KMJ. I love you. God bless. Bye-bye. Be safe.
It's the Ray Appleton Podcast from KMJ and KMJNow.com.
Named one of the best personal finance podcasts, The Stacking Benjamin Show with Joe and his friends makes financial literacy fun.
Work hard and save your money. That way, when you're old like me, you can buy the things that only young people can enjoy.
Squirrel watching.
You heard it here first. Get yourself a squirrel cam. Spend $30 a month on nuts, and you'll be at early retirement before you know it.
No, Piggy, this is the road to a podcast nobody listens to.
Find out more by searching The Stacking Benjamins podcast, wherever you listen.